Hey, everybody, it's the Context Machine. Welcome to it. This is episode number 679. I'm Brian Chaffin. Come on, and Jeff. You know, I know I didn't give you any guidelines, any suggestions, but you know what to say.
I totally freaked out because I didn't know what name I was supposed to say. But I'll just wing it. Hey, everyone, I'm Jeff Gamet, and you should totally check us out on our online home, contextmachine.io.
Yeah, nicely done. You even got the online. Anyway, you can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on Mastodon at Context Machine and on Blue Sky at contextmachine.bsky.social.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited about this episode because we're going to talk about Andor and how much we love Andor and like we're going to do a deep dive on it where I'm going to learn some things.
This is actually really exciting because this is one of those TV show, movie, book things where I can actually fill in blanks for you.
Yeah. Isn't that what the show does? Isn't that what we always do? It's where you fill in blanks.
Oh, right. For me. Right. I'm sorry. I got this screwed up with another show.
I mean, yeah, if we're talking about Hyperion or we're talking about Game of Thrones, that's going to be me filling in everything. Mm-hmm. If we're going to talk about writing, that's probably going to be me filling you in, unless, of course, it's writing for all the writing that you do. But if we're talking about writing fiction, I mean, yeah, there are plenty of things that I could fill in for you, but we don't ever talk about those because this show is about you helping me as the Lord above intended.
Right. All praise the Lord's a cobalt. So say we all.
So say we all. All right, let's dive into the some of the. I don't even know how to put this. I wanted to talk about the French Resistance, and
everyone just to be clear, we're talking about Andor season 2.
Yes,
and as we record, the last three episodes have not aired yet. So if you're listening to this down the road and you wonder why we didn't talk about whatever's going to be in those, that's why.
Right. And we could have waited. We could have talked about this next week, but I got super excited after watching this week's three episodes. Well, all right. So let's start there. Let's start with the way they're unfolding the show because Disney has been rolling out three episodes per week and they are a one a week streaming service normally.
Right. So what they're kind of doing for us is giving us a feature film a week for the Andor series.
A feature film broken into three parts.
Yes. And so each of these, and I'm doing air quotes, features covers 1 year each set of three is a specific year. And so each time we're getting 1 year closer to the original Star Wars movie, you know, the original Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia movie.
And to Rogue One, right?
Right. And Rogue One takes place right before the original movie and where it ends is minutes, maybe an hour, something like that, before the original Star Wars movie starts chronologically.
Right. Making Rogue One essentially episode zero.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry, episode 3.5, I guess.
Huh. Well,
I don't really know how to think about that.
Yeah, I guess it would be like 3.5.
Sorry, 3.99.
Actually, let's go 3.9 because where episode 3 ends and where Rogue One starts, we have about, close to 20 years, 18 years.
Right. Do we have any content yet from Disney that fills in that gap? Because I don't think we do.
So we have, okay, so we have leading up to, well, actually, the content we have, it's all like the last, well, now with Andor season, both Andor seasons, that's where we're getting content leading up. So we do have a big gap of about 10 years from when the Empire started to when Andor begins. Ish.
Right. Right. Okay. That makes sense. I'm wondering if they'll end up filling in that gap at some point. Let's break it down. Where does Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett come in? I mean,
Mandalorian.
Believe it or not, I actually know this answer, but.
Okay. So Mandalorian starts about a year after the fall of the Empire.
Okay. That makes sense.
So this would be about a year after Return of the Jedi.
Got it. That makes sense. And Book of Boba Fett?
And Book of Boba Fett, there's this weird up in the air thing with that, because it's they're like, how long does Baby Yoda stay with? We're total spoilers for this whole episode, everyone. There's no way to avoid it. How long does Baby Yoda stay with Luke Skywalker training? And so that determines where Book of Boba Fett fits in. So let's call it for right now, like 5 years after the fall of the Empire.
Okay.
And it's kind of vague.
And the Obi-Wan series is clearly between the fall and episode 4.
Yes.
Obviously, by definition.
Yep.
And where does
Ahsoka? And so Ahsoka falls in line with Mandalorian. And so it's overlapping Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett.
Wait a minute. Ahsoka is post episode 6? Post the Return of the Jedi?
Yeah. Yeah. You remember Mando meets Ahsoka.
Oh, yeah.
And so that determines when her show is taking place. And then Ahsoka, that's leading up to the return of Grand Admiral Thrawn, which starts setting everything up for the First Order.
Right. Right. Okay, so let's get back to Andor. I loved the way that they hearkened back to the French Resistance versus the Nazis for the Gorman stuff, the stuff that's taking place on the planet of Gorman. So obviously the Empire folks look like Nazis because that's always been the case. The Empire has always been the Nazis. The Empire has always been the bad guys. The Nazis are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just so we're all clear on
yes,
that.
Yes. I want to for anyone listening to that who may be thinking otherwise, understand that the Nazis are the bad guys.
Yes. The fascists are the bad guys.
Yes. And so anyway, I love how they have it's not that the Gorman society is French. It's just they look so much like the French from the 40s, and they look so much like the French Resistance has always been portrayed in movies, and I'm just enjoying the crap out of that.
Yeah, there's definitely similarities there, and I like the whole idea of the underground radio communications, mm-hmm. which we also see in season one, because that's how Luthen and Clea are communicating with the different cells.
Yes.
That are out there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I feel like they obviously drew, they went to stories of the resistance in France and other parts of Europe to the Nazis during World War II for how they were going to structure the rebellion.
You know, as you're saying that, I realized that it's a great theme. The way they've crafted these themes of the resistance pockets and the way we see them physically, the way they're costumed, the way they talk, how that aligns so beautifully with Rogue One, which is the movie that will take place chronologically right after Andor season two. Part of what they did with that movie very intentionally was made the big land battle and sky battle to get the Death Star plans.
Oh yeah.
Look and feel like a World War II battle.
Right.
That was very intentional.
And that goes back to Lucas's goal. His model for episode four, Star Wars, A New Hope. I did not almost say Star Trek. I don't care what you say.
No, I'm sure you did not almost say Star Trek.
Almost stumble over my words and say Star Trek. Anyway,
Star Trek, The Rise of Picard.
His model for all of the space battles was the World War II dogfight movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was very, very specifically. It wasn't an accident. He was purposely modeling the shots after the World War II dogfight movies.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And in some cases, it's a shot for shot match.
Yeah. Right. Right. So,
and it worked.
I also am very entertained by the Gorman language. It sounds very French to me. It is a made-up language, and I am in awe of how comprehensive they made that part of the culture feel to us as viewers. But anyway, so
it's wonderful.
They clearly modeled that language off of French, and that makes sense because it's the French Resistance.
Well, except that they say they did not model it off of French.
They're lying. So who's they in this case?
The writers and producers.
They said this where?
In multiple interviews.
Okay.
Once the series dropped.
That's utter nonsense because they sound like they're speaking French, except for that it's not French.
Well...
And the mere fact that they were asked this says that other people
sound.
That other people think that too.
Oh yeah, of course, other people are thinking it.
Such a weird lie to tell.
Or they put this language together, and then afterwards they're like, "Huh, yeah, I guess it does sound kind of French."
Hey, I know. Let's make them look like the French Resistance.
I did not see a single beret, which is a stereotype in the World War II movies for French Resistance.
That's
true. They
have to
have a scarf and a beret
but
in the movies.
The way they wear their coats, the way they're
the collars,
the collars, the coats. It's so modeled on the French Resistance, and I've loved it. I've loved the immersive world they've made. For this show.
Oh, it's wonderful. And it's clear that they are paying very close attention to all the details.
Yes.
And many of those details are subtle, like the colors of clothing.
Yeah.
And the fabrics that they use.
Yeah.
Like the gore. Yeah. Well, yeah. But yes, the Gore Resistance, they have coarser looking fabrics.
Yeah.
The city workers and then of course higher levels in the, I'll call it a caste system for lack of a better word. It's you can see much finer fabrics. It's like the Gore people that are making this these textiles that the rest of the galaxy covets. They're not wearing that same fabric.
Right. Right. That is, you're right. And that is a nice touch. That is a nice touch. Yeah. By the way, I absolutely adore the regalia, the clothing that is adopted by all of the human people in the Senate on Coruscant. The upper class. The clothing is so fine looking and it's so everything is always presented just so. You know,
it's very regal.
Yes, it's very regal. It is luscious. It is glorious. It just feels so real.
Oh yeah, they have done a wonderful job of crafting a world that we can be fully immersed in, and by that it's a real world.
Yeah.
Or a real galaxy.
Yes. Fair enough. And I've also appreciated, I mean, this show feels like a movie. And while that's the case for a lot of the streaming content that Disney has made for Star Wars, it is to the nth degree on Andor in season two.
Mm-hmm. I am just impressed. Okay, season one, after that wrapped up, the hill that I was willing to die on was Andor is hands down the best live action Star Wars series ever. And then season two comes along and I'm like, how could you top season one? And yet here we are.
Yeah.
And we still have three episodes left.
Right. By the way, it does kind of stink. I don't know the actor's name that plays Cassian Andor. Do you?
Yeah. Luna Diego.
Right. It kind of stinks that he probably can't.
Excuse me, Diego Luna. I can't believe I said his name backwards.
Yes, it is Diego Luna. Right, fair enough. I Googled it, but he will not be able to reprise this role.
That's true,
and I feel like and my understanding is that he's one of the people that championed the series being made.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, he really wanted to explore Andor's backstory and see what journey took him to where we find him in Rogue One.
Right. Right. It's good stuff. So let's also take a moment to talk about the sets. The sets are so amazing. There was one establishing shot. I think it was in episode four, but it could have been episode five. But it was an establishing shot where they're flying into a city, or maybe it's just like a drone style establishment shot. That really felt yes.
You said it was early in the episode.
Yes, I think so.
Maybe before the show started.
No,
but anyhow.
No, it was definitely
so early. Show. It was dark, nope. And maybe kind of rainy outside.
Nope.
That one.
Nope.
Okay, then it was probably gore, because that the dark shot where you see the tall buildings and it's kind of rainy and stuff, that's actually Coruscant.
Yeah, I don't think it was. Anyway, there was one shot that felt like really bad quality CGI to me. And other than that, everything has felt real. Everything has felt so real on the show. And where did they film the stairway shots, the outside stairs that led up to the Senate building, for instance, in the last episode? That felt like they were on this massive set. It did not feel like there was CGI. I'm sure there was, but it didn't feel like it. It's just, we are so in a magical time right now.
Oh yeah. It's just, yeah, magical. That's a really great word to use. Yeah. My guess is that someone somewhere has already been posting images of some of the locations that they used, because I think they did all the on location filming in the UK.
Hmm. Okay.
So, someone has to have photos of like, oh, well, here's the outside of this building, and you can see where they CGI'd in additional elements.
Right.
In the first three episodes of season two, there's that kind of wheat field thing.
Yes.
That's like farm country outside London or something.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, it was the whole world just feels, and also let's give some credit to George Lucas here, because mm-hmm. George Lucas, and I know that we've mentioned this on this show once at some point, but the magic of Star Wars was in large part the fact that he wanted to make a lived-in, sometimes broken-down world, rather than the pristine, everything is shiny and clean science fiction that had come before Star Wars.
And he did a fantastic job, and he gave us a great setup so that we can have shows like this.
Yes, and they have absolutely continued that. Everything feels so lived in, and that's what brings the show alive. It's what brings mm-hmm. all the shows. It's what makes them all feel so real and immersive, is because everything looks lived in.
Yes. Yes. And you can believe it. It's even though it's fantastical science fiction, it's a believable universe.
I also,
especially when you take out the space wizard parts.
But why would you do that? I'm okay with the space wizards. Anyway, whatever. Go ahead.
The space wizard stuff is fun, but I can believe Andor. Seasons.
I believe in Jedis. What do you mean
there's a different way of believing in it. Like when I see the Star Wars series, the other stuff where we get the Jedi, sure, I can believe it. I have my suspension of disbelief. But when I'm watching Andor, I believe it in a different way, because I can look at it and relate to it in the sense that this could happen to us. Yeah. And there's no space wizard showing up to fix it. It's just real people like us just trying to get by and trying to make a better life for themselves in or under the boot heel of a repressive regime.
Right. I want to also take a second out to marvel at the steampunk feel, because Andor, especially the stuff on Gorma, has felt much more steampunky than other episodes, than other shows. I love steampunk, of course. Mm-hmm. And everything, I just love the look and feel of the technology in Andor in particular.
I'm with you. The aesthetic is just wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. All right. Did you have something else to say?
I was going to ask if you want to look at how well they've woven in elements into Andor from other Star Wars properties.
Well, sure. Of course. What you got?
Okay. Well, why don't we start with Forrest Whitaker's character, Saw Gerrera.
Okay.
And so he's the guerrilla warfare soldier with his own rebel cell. And we did get to see him in Rogue One.
Yes.
And he's a character that's introduced to us in the Star Wars Clone Wars series. Mm. And he actually learns a lot of the guerrilla tactics that he uses from Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ahsoka Tano, and Captain Rex, because they're sent kind of like undercover to train this rebel cell. His sister is killed during a battle with the separatists, and he watches his sister die, and it breaks him in a way. And then we see him again in Star Wars Rebels, which is the animated Star Wars series that's taking place chronologically parallel with Andor. Mm. So we're getting to see him in two series at the same time, essentially. So there's that. Then there's other references that they have, like when they talk about the original massacre on Gorman, where they have the memorial statue in the middle of the square, and it's Governor Tarkin that was responsible for that, who is Grand Moff Tarkin by the time the original Star Wars movie happens.
Right.
And we get to see him as Captain Tarkin in the Clone Wars series, and as Grand Moff in Star Wars Rebels. Then there's this wonderful reference that they do in the last episode that we saw so far, I Have Friends Everywhere. And that's the one where Mon Mothma has to be extracted from the Senate. And so Cassian Andor becomes the person that gets her safely out. And then she's supposed to be taken more spoilers. So he's supposed to take her to the rebel base. Well, already established in Star Wars Rebels, Cassian Andor does not get her there. It's the Spectre cell, which is Hera Syndulla and the rest of her crew, and Chopper, the little robot that we see in live action in Ahsoka, and instead it's Gold Squadron, they say, that's going to take Mon Mothma on from Cassian and actually deliver her. So what they did was they gave us this great scene where Cassian and Mon Mothma are introduced to each other. but they don't break the chronology, the canon that they've already established. Because in Star Wars Rebels, it is Gold Squadron that takes Mon Mothma on from there, but ultimately ends up needing the assistance of the Spectre team to safely deliver her.
I see.
So cool little tie-ins like that, where you didn't know and it doesn't matter. But for everyone that's watched and paying attention, that's like a really cool detail to drop in there for us.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I know that I'm supposed to know who Senator Mothma is, but who is she?
Who are you?
I'm okay. I can tell you all about Hyperion. I can tell you all about the Lord of the Rings and a Game of Thrones and a few other properties. But I, as much as I love Star Wars, I have not immersed myself.
Okay, well, I've got Star Wars and Star Trek covered for you, okay? So, Mon Mothma, yes, you have seen her, and you've seen her many times over the years. So, do you remember in the original Star Wars movie where they're having the briefing about the plans for the Death Star and how they're going to launch their attack?
Yeah.
And there's a woman there, white robe.
Yes.
That's Mon Mothma.
Ah.
And yeah, so we see her there. We see her again in Return of the Jedi. And so we see her as a recurring character. She's just not a main character in those. Where we see her as a more pivotal character is in the Star Wars Clone Wars series. So there's a lot of interaction with Mon Mothma and Bail Organa and other senators. And so we see the early parts of who she is and how she starts to become who she's going to be before the fall of the Empire, or excuse me, the fall of the Republic. And then we get to see her in again in Star Wars Rebels, and then we also see her in the Yavin base in Rogue One.
It's the same actress that played the Mon Mothma in Rogue One.
Yes,
that is playing her now.
Correct.
Okay. Is that the only time we've seen this actress in this role? Is these Andor in Rogue One?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so. Yes. A different actress back in the original Star Wars trilogy.
Of course.
And different voice actor in Star Wars Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels.
She is, her presence on the screen is just it is amazing and impressive.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Here's another thing for you. You know how in Rogue One, we see Saw and he's got that little face mask that he keeps breathing on. And we all assume Saw Gerrera, Forrest Whitaker's character.
Oh, okay. Right. Yes.
So in Rogue One, we see him and he keeps breathing from this thing. And we're all assuming it's like, oh, he needs a hit of oxygen. And then we get the episode that's very heavy on his character where they go and steal the fuel, the rhodium fuel, they call it rhodi. And they talk about it's like huffing paint, essentially. And so my takeaway after that whole thing is that that the mask, he's actually huffing the spaceship fuel.
Oh.
And that's why he's got that little thing.
Well, that's wrong.
No kidding. but it gives us this whole new take on that character.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. I happen to know that you've got to be somewhere.
Yeah, another galaxy far, far away, right?
Yes. So we should probably cut it, which means I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to say that's it for this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, question, whatever, write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded just for the show. And that's it for this week, Jeff.
Yeah. Hey, may the force be with you.
May the force be with you.